This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. In reaction to the bombing at the Olympics and the downing of TWA Flight 800, President Clinton has asked for new measures that would help the FBI track terrorists. My guest, Jim McGee, is the co-author of a new book examining the inner workings of the Justice Department. He writes, "No other institution has the resources to protect Americans from the worst kinds of crime." But he warns, "No other institution presents a more immediate threat to our civil liberties." McGee is an investigative reporter for The Washington Post. He won a George Polk Award for his reporting on terrorism. President Clinton is asking Congress to give the FBI the authority to use roving wiretaps, that is, to legally wiretap any phone or series of phones used by a suspected terrorist. McGee says that there's already been a dramatic rise in the use of wiretaps under Janet Reno. Some question whether the expanded use of wiretaps is justified.
I think those questions are perennial. They come up all the time. The American Civil Liberties Union and others have raised questions about do we need this level of wiretapping and electronic surveillance? Is it really the magic bullet, if you will, to deter crime, or are more sort of traditional forms of investigating more appropriate and just as effective? One of the things that needs to be said is that you have an Attorney General, Janet Reno, who, in the very first instance, is a career prosecutor. This is an attorney general who believes in using all the tools lawfully that the Congress and has provided to the executive branch to fight crime. She believes in using them a lot, using them early and often. And in many of the interviews we did asking people these same questions, trying to get a handle on why there are such an increase in national security wiretaps, the answer is the Attorney General is pushing us to stay ahead of the curve on terrorism. She doesn't want, she wants those wiretaps up before the bombings start or occur so that they can, in effect, be deterred. There is a cost in a free society when you face these threats and you use these kind of tools.
And what is the cost?
Well, the cost is that we all are going to have to live with a lot more electronic surveillance. And we're going to, but that's true across the board. We as a nation are going to be living with a good deal more searches of our baggage when we go into public places and go into airports. These are complicated issues. And I think what you'll see, Terry, is that Congress will be debating these over time. I mean, there's a strong political impetus at the moment, I think, from the Clinton administration to expand these measures beyond what they already are.
Do you know where you're personally willing to draw the line between sacrificing personal civil liberties in the hopes that terrorists will be thwarted?
I have to confess I'm entirely ambivalent about this personally. I have, as part of researching this book and for years covering federal investigations, what you see in the case files is that the criminal groups like the Cali Cartel and the terrorist groups that are carrying out acts such as the Trade Center bombing are becoming increasingly sophisticated. The technology they use is oftentimes far superior to what law enforcement has. That is driving the government to respond in kind. On the other side of the issue, I would suggest, is that we need to put this in perspective. There's a great deal of anxiety in the United States about crime and about violence. But we try to point out that the rate of violent crime has gone down 3 years in a row, that the FBI, the DEA, and the law enforcement agencies are very good at what they do. While we've had some very troubling terrorist events in this country, if you look at the context of the last 10 or 15 years, I think you see a fairly good record of the law enforcement agencies responding to them. So those are two sides of the issue.
How much has the Justice Department grown in the past few years, and in what ways has it grown?
The growth has been phenomenal. When the Clinton administration came into office, the budget was approximately $9 billion. The House of Representatives has just voted out a bill that would make it raise it to $16 billion. In the time we began looking at it, in roughly the last 10 years, it's more than doubled in size. And so you have a very large institution that is getting much larger. We are in the process of a fairly rapid and fairly a fairly rapid expansion of federal law enforcement in this country. In 5 years, the Border Patrol, which used to be a small sort of federal police agency on the borders and checkpoints, will be as large as the FBI. They absolutely intend to raise the number of Border Patrol agents to 10,000. The DEA's budget this year will exceed $1 billion. The FBI's budget will exceed approximately $3 billion. And so we're in the middle of a big buildup. And it's wholly bipartisan. Both Republicans and Democrats on the Hill support it. Their differences are on the margins, questions of emphasis. This administration favors it. And what's important about the Justice Department is that it is the Justice Department, especially the headquarters in Washington, is the one institution that is presently capable of managing this buildup in a way that accomplishes the mission of addressing serious crime without at the same time jeopardizing our civil liberties.
What's behind the buildup? Is the buildup a response to the new threats that the FBI has to investigate, like terrorism within the United States and the militias within the United States?
The buildup is in response to authentic threats from criminal organizations, but that's not the entire answer. I mean, there are a number of factors driving this. One is that this buildup has, in effect, been going on for 20 years, beginning in 1968 and in succeeding crime bills, whether they were Democrats or Republicans in controlling Congress. The power of the federal government, its authority in criminal matters, has been steadily expanded. I've seen a Justice Department document that says the Justice Department now has jurisdiction over 84% of all crimes committed, that they could find some federal jurisdiction. And so we're in the midst of a wholesale federalization of law enforcement and of criminal law in this country. And so that's the first part of it, is that the laws have been written to expand this authority. What is driving it is both fear of crime, this perception that crime is out of control. You can do a better political analysis than I can of the Clinton administration's desire to stay ahead of the crime issue. When Brian Duffy, my co-author, and I say that this buildup has been wholly bipartisan, if you read the statements of senior members of Congress on the floor, Senator Biden, Senator Hatch, both Republicans and Democrats are supporters of this, and after all, they are the ones who represent, ostensibly in a democracy, the desires of their constituents.
When you say that we're witnessing a federalization of criminal law, what do you mean?
What I mean by that is that increasingly, when crimes are committed, 20 years ago, when a shooting occurred in a downtown neighborhood, when drugs were sold, when various serious crimes occurred, people would often think first of the state authorities, that a state patrolman or a local police officer would make the arrest and the case would go into the local courts and be prosecuted. Increasingly, the federal government has concurrent jurisdiction over those crimes. And one of the ways to see this is the shift of the FBI's resources beginning in the late early 90s, 1991, 92, into the area of violent crime. And so you now have FBI agents who, in years past, we thought of them handling bank fraud cases and espionage cases and the uniquely federal issues like organized crime, now using the same tools they once used against the mafia to target local criminal groups, a drug gang that might distribute drugs on the streets of Coconut Grove, Florida, or San Diego, California, and have 15 or 20 members. That's part and parcel of this federalization. Now, when you talk to senior officials at the department, what they say is, when you pose the issue, is federalization a good thing? Is it happening? Their response really is, look, it's happening, and it's what's going to occur in this country, and that the big issue now is how to manage it, how to manage this growth in a way that is consistent with our traditions as a free society.
My guest is Jim McGee, co-author of the new book, Main Justice, An Examination of the Justice Department. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back to Jim McGee. He's an investigative reporter for The Washington Post and co-author of a new book about the Justice Department. Everybody in America now is worried about terrorism. What is the Justice Department's role in investigating terrorism now, and how is that role changing?
Well, the Justice Department's role is to prosecute crimes that are related to terrorism. And the FBI, in the first instance, investigates domestic terrorism and also has a role investigating international terrorism. To understand the Justice Department's entree into these cases is to find evidence to prosecute criminals. When a bomb explodes in Atlanta, as it did at the Olympics, the mission is to find the suspect, make the arrest, and prosecute that person. And that's the Justice Department's role, but of course it's more complicated than that. They have become, in effect, here at Main Justice in Washington, the managers of a very large apparatus. When something like when these large terrorist events occur, there are a lot of resources within the U.S. government, both from the Department of Defense to the Coast Guard to the Central Intelligence Agency to the National Security Agency, that are brought to bear for various reasons. And that has to be coordinated somewhere. And very often the job of coordination of directing these assets falls to the Justice Department. Because they're the ones in the final instance who have to deliver the product of making that arrest and prosecuting that defendant.
Janet Reno met this week with members of the G7 to talk about international terrorism. Is the FBI taking a larger role in international terrorism than it ever did before?
Yes. Director Free and the Attorney General believe strongly that the FBI ought to have a larger presence overseas, on the theory that the threats to this country begin overseas very often in international terrorist groups, Russian organized crime, and so forth. And they have done a lot of work in the last two or three years to establish relationships with countries, corresponding police agencies in other countries. The FBI, I think the vision of this director is to have a lot more FBI agents overseas working in cooperative efforts with law enforcement agencies over there. They see it as kind of a, if you will, a picket fence of sentries out there around the world that will make some effort to stop the more serious crimes before they reach these shores. The Attorney General has spent a lot of time in the last 2 years on international law enforcement. She's been to Europe several months ago, meeting with interior ministers, and I'm sure that this issue remains, at the top of the. It's not surprising that she would be taking a serious role in this visit to Paris.
Now, isn't the job of intelligence gathering overseas the job of the CIA? How does the CIA feel about the FBI getting into that territory?
That's a very complicated question. They both are large institutions. They both do, they have a lot invested in their institutional roles. The CIA does gather intelligence on international terrorist groups overseas. That is one of the more difficult issues to sort out as we speak between the FBI and the CIA. When the Attorney General makes, as she does, a very serious effort to increase the Justice Department's role overseas, what follows in the wake of that are very complicated questions about if the CIA is dealing with sources, for example, overseas. At what point can those sources be handed off to FBI agents who will use them for different matters? I mean, the CIA, it has to be said, has almost no choice but to deal with very often sources of a unsavory character, and they do this for one reason. I mean, their goal is to protect the national security of the United States. The FBI, on the other hand, has the mission of gathering competent evidence that can be presented in court. That's their job, and therein lies great potential for conflict.
What's the conflict?
Well, that the CIA applies different standards to its by virtue of the role it has, it can deal with different sources in different ways than the FBI does. And the rules and the laws that govern evidence gathering for prosecution in the United States are far different from the rules that govern the work of an average CIA agent.
You write that under President Clinton, the CIA and the FBI have become more closely intertwined than ever before. In what ways?
I think they've begun to see, based on what we've been told in our reporting and what's been described in Congress, they have begun to try to share information in a far more effective way. They realize that they are very often looking at the same targets. And as the FBI moves overseas and begins to focus on many of the same targets that the CIA is already gathering information on, the job is going to be, how do you preserve the special roles of both institutions while at the same time finding a way to make the best use of the information each has gathered? One would not, you know, you could, I was once interviewing a senior official of the department who said, look, you know, the American people want terrorism stopped, and they would never forgive us if we didn't make the best use of the information from both the CIA and the FBI and all their assets. Now, the difficulty lies in how do you preserve this country's tradition of civil liberties, the values of the Bill of Rights. How do you preserve the sanctity of the criminal justice system when you're also dealing with a very large intelligence gathering agency? The answer that they've arrived at is to have a larger role for the Justice Department, both in an office called the Office of Intelligence Policy Review, which tries to sort out these issues and is somewhat of a nexus point between the CIA, the NSA, and on the other side, the FBI and the DEA. This administration created a new Office of National Security at the department, which does much the same on law enforcement matters. These are not easy issues, and within the intelligence community, within the law enforcement community, they are clearly moving much closer together, and that will be the challenge of the next decade.
You're concerned that the Justice Department and the CIA have been working more closely together, and there's been no meaningful debate about this expanding relationship between the FBI and the CIA. What kind of debate do you think we ought to be having?
Well, it seemed to us as we did the reporting that this, what we call a de facto merger, has occurred or is in the process of occurring. When you bring law enforcement agencies together with in a cooperative working relationship with the intelligence community, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it is an issue that's fraught with very complicated questions. In doing this research, you know, we went back to the Church Committee hearings that you'll remember from the 70s, and Senator Church and his colleagues, I think their report still stands as one of the most important documents, certainly on intelligence gathering in this country. He posed for this country serious concerns about what happens when you don't keep these two missions of law enforcement and intelligence gathering roughly separate. And for a while, there was a fairly high wall between the two worlds of intelligence gathering and law enforcement.
What were some of the Church Committee's concerns that you think have already come to pass?
The Church Committee's concerns, and this is a layman's sort of assessment of it, is are we going to have the intelligence community involved in activities that look very much like law enforcement, targeting citizens of the United States? Those intelligence agencies that were created in the first instance to oppose foreign threats, having those powers turned upon the American people. And the answer in the first instance arising out of the Church Committee was that they were going to take those two large institutions, law enforcement and intelligence, and keep them separate. And for many years they were, by and large.
And as the FBI and the CIA start sharing more information and working more together, are you personally more concerned that powers might be abused and that investigative powers might be unlawfully directed against citizens of the United States.
Well, I remember doing an interview where one lawyer involved in this said, look, people in the intelligence community are always upset about the Church Committee and its aftermath. And he said, well, you know, people in the intelligence community ought to take their actions with the Church Committee in mind. And I think I personally come away from this reporting thinking that we are in a world where these powers and these authorities, first of all, need to be managed very tightly by people who are grounded in our traditions, who are grounded in our laws. Secondly, that the press and the Congress have to pay very close attention to the people who are managing these powers, how they're being used, and whether they are consistent with our values. So I think we're in a time when this new relationship between law enforcement and the intelligence community is in effect being reinvented, and we need to pay close attention to it.
Thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Jim McGee is co-author of the new book, Main Justice. He's an investigative reporter for The Washington Post. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.